Bonjour, salam alaikum, sanmonani, hello, and welcome to the Africa Matters podcast. We're so excited that you can join us for yet another exciting episode of this incredible podcast. Now, once again, our usual disclaimer is that if you are looking for a podcast that speaks to how Africa is the dark continent with no hope, then this is not the podcast for you. But if you're looking for a podcast that speaks of Africa's potential, Africa's growth, Africa's human and economic development that is led by young people, then this is indeed the podcast for you. Welcome again to the Africa Matters podcast. My name is Farai Mubaiwa, and I am your host. Now, today's topic, we're talking about something that is really, really dear to me and that really captures the work that I do every day. We're talking about youth unemployment in Africa. And this is such a critical topic, and I'll give you more context before we actually deep dive into the conversation. Youth account for 60% of Africa's joblessness, according to the World Bank. And in North Africa, you find that the youth unemployment rate is 25%. But this unemployment rate is even greater in Botswana, the DRC, Senegal, and South Africa. With over 200 million young people aged between 15 to 24, Africa has the largest population of youth in the world, and yet we have such high levels of youth unemployment. In many of our African countries, youth unemployment occurs at a rate more than twice than that for adults, according to the African Development Bank. Young women, in particular, feel the sting of youth unemployment even more than young men. And the AFDB has found that in most countries in sub-Saharan Africa and all of those in North Africa, it is much easier for men to get jobs than it is for women, even if women have the equivalent skills and experience. A lot of Africa's unemployment statistics exclude those in vulnerable employment and those who are underemployed in informal sectors. And so, to our listeners, we have a crisis of youth unemployment in our continent. And this crisis is compounded by the fact that Africa has got this emerging youth demographic. Now, what are we to do? How are we to solve this crisis? How are we to ensure that youth unemployment is something of the past? And to engage in this really important conversation, we have got an incredible young leader with us today. Her name is Pearl Pillay. She's a youth development practitioner based in Johannesburg, South Africa. She's currently the managing director of Youth Lab, which is a national think tank that aims to mainstream youth participation in community development and policy making. She holds a master's degree in political studies from Wits University, where they focus on youth participation and policy making, and is currently a PhD candidate at the University of Cape Town. We're so excited to welcome Pearl to the show. We're going to learn so much from her. And thank you so much, Pearl, for giving us your time and your expertise today as we unpack youth unemployment in Africa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Farai. Thank you for having me. I hope that I can actually teach people something, because if not, it's going to be a very awkward introduction.
You're definitely going to teach people something. In our prior conversations, you've already taught me so much. So let's deep dive straight into this now. So just before we get into, you know, actually looking at youth unemployment itself, can you tell us more about the work that you do at Youth Lab?
Yeah, so like you've already intro Youth Lab really well. We are a think tank that specializes in youth participation and mainstreaming youth participation. What that means is that the work we do is centered around building youth capacity. We began with focusing particularly on the policy space, but have now moved into areas like entrepreneurship, community development, and so on. And the idea is that young people have ideas. They have skills, they have, you know, they're smart, they're hardworking. We know all of those things that are true about young people, but what they lack is sometimes resource support. Sometimes they might lack opportunity. And so what we try to do is find ways to build youth capacity in whatever spaces young people might be in, so that the work that they do can be more impactful and more sustainable. And what this means is that if you're a young entrepreneur with a small business that you're trying to get off the ground, we create programming that can help give you the kind of resource support that you might need to grow your business. So if you're a young person in the policy space, what that means is that we provide opportunities for you to A, engage with policymakers, to learn about the policymaking process, and to provide opportunities to give input to different policies that affect young people. And so really, in a nutshell, it's just about finding young people where they are and figuring out ways to support the work that they're already doing with the hope that they'll in turn be able to create opportunities for other young people.
Thanks so much, Pearl, for telling us more about the work of Youth Lab. I think it's really, really fantastic that you know, not only is the organization actually meeting and supporting young people where they are, but that 100% of the ownership is young Black women. And that is so critical, especially to ensure that representation, that inclusivity is there. So really, congratulations on the work. And I look forward to seeing what Youth Lab will continue to do. So let's hop straight into the next question, which is, what is the definition of unemployment? And there's obviously two. There's one as per the International Labour Organization, and then there's the expanded definition of unemployment. Can you just take us through both of these?
Cool. So the International Labour Organization, I think the first thing to just understand is that their measurement is strictly on their definition of unemployment. They don't take into consideration the expanded definition in their work. And so when you read figures and statistics from them, you must always keep that top of mind, because while the statistics might seem low, they don't paint the bigger picture of the unemployment situation. So employment is, as part of the ILO's definition, basically comprises of people who are at work and people who are not at work due to a temporary absence. And so they refer to you as either what we call in South Africa a job seeker, right? So if you're either someone who was employed and is now no longer employed temporarily, or you haven't been employed for a while, but you are actively job seeking, then that's what they defined as you being unemployed. So the expanded definition of unemployment then refers to the totality of people who are eligible to work but may not be job seeking for whatever reason. In South Africa, we refer to them as NEETs, so NEETs, which is people who are not in education, employment, or training. We also include what we call discouraged work seekers, so people that have been trying to find a job for a really long time and haven't been able to, and have eventually just kind of given up on finding a job. And so when you think about the extended definition of employment, it refers to people who are even not interested or not able to even look for a job anymore. But just because they're old enough to be able to gain employment, you count them as part of your unemployment statistics. So that would be the difference.
Yeah, sure. All right. And I think, I mean, that's really important to understand. And just based on your explanation, what is the more accurate definition of unemployment to me is the extended or the expanded definition, because it does, as you mentioned, paint a larger picture.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about people's context, especially if you look at a young person's trajectory from the education part of it, right, is you could go into tertiary education and study and finish your degree and continue studying because you haven't found work. And the normal definition of employment wouldn't actually count you as an unemployed person. Right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not actively seeking work, you're not actively in the job market, and you might be extending your studies precisely because you can't find jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is really important to think about the extended definition and to always contrast that against official employment figures that you get, because it gives you the broader picture of actually how many people are sitting at home without work.
Sure. That is really, really important. And I appreciate that you even gave that explanation to further our understanding. Now, what's the current rate of youth unemployment in Africa, and why is this rate so high?
So this is a tricky question, because if you look at the global measures of unemployment, there actually isn't a standard measure that can say across the continent, this is what the unemployment rates are. So if you look at the ILO, which I think does the most comprehensive work on unemployment globally, even their definitions don't encapsulate the entire continent. So, for example, they'll split between North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. You already mentioned North Africa in your introduction. So in North Africa, for example, the ILO measures their unemployment rate at around 24% in 2012 and has been steadily increasing since then, right? And then they look at Sub-Saharan Africa, and they actually estimated at around 38% for the total unemployment rate, but only about 23% for young people. Now, there's an important context that we can sometimes miss when looking at how these rates are measured. So in Sub-Saharan Africa, for example, unemployment rates look like they're very low. But the truth is that young people simply cannot afford to go to work, to not go to work. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the term that is used to refer to those groups of people is called the working poor. So what it means is that you live in extreme poverty, and that poverty doesn't allow you to actually be unemployed. So you'll do kind of any kind of job because you actually have no other choice. Now, that's not employment. Mm-hmm. So in Sub-Saharan Africa, the rate is sitting at about 31%. But young people account for 23% of that, right? And what that means, though, is actually that because of the level of poverty in Sub-Saharan Africa, young people simply cannot afford to not work. And so the kind of employment that they get and the kind of work that they do isn't actually part of, you know, some great career development journey that they're on. It's literally being able to find ways to survive because you don't have the means to not be employed, right? And so I think it's important to think about those contexts because it helps us to explain the numbers that we see. So if we're saying there are about 38% of what's called the working poor, 23% of those people are youth, you might think, oh, okay, you know, those numbers are actually relatively low. But the truth of the matter is people just cannot afford to stay at home. And then when you contrast that again back to North Africa, the numbers there are actually quite high. And North Africa boasts a kind of more educated labor force than the rest of the continent, right? So this is also then kind of tipping into that conversation around education and around unemployed graduates and whether or not we actually have labor markets that can adapt for young people and the qualifications and experiences that they do have. And so the numbers are obviously very up in the air. You know, we're not able to pin down and say this is what Africa's unemployment rate is. However, the World Bank has said in work that they've done that about 60% of all jobless people in Africa are youth. And so that, I think, is an alarming statistic. Whether we know how many people in total are unemployed or not, we know that now a majority, 6 out of 10 jobless people on the continent are young people. And I think those are for me at least, those are the statistics that kind of jump out a lot more than saying, you know, just generally how many people are employed. The other thing that we have to consider is that when measuring employment, people also take into consideration an economy's ability to actually create work and create, you know, a labor market. And so when you measure against that, then rates end up looking even lower because they're saying, well, countries can't actually provide jobs anyway. And so the unemployment issue might not be an issue about people themselves, but about the structures that they live in. And so I think spotlighting the fact that 60% of jobless people in Africa are young people is the more important statistic here. When you look at North Africa, I think it sits at around 25%. But if you think about it, if you look at youth about the ages of 15 and 24, there are about 200 million of us on the continent. And if you think about just the sheer numbers then of what that means when we say 60% of all jobless people are actually young, those numbers then become staggering. Like you said, it occurs at a rate more than twice of that for adults. So for every one adult that's unemployed, there's at least two young people that aren't.
Sure. And I think, thank you for painting that picture, because that really helps us to understand the gravity of youth unemployment on the continent. And so with 60% of your job seekers being young people, is Africa's youth boom then an economic burden or an economic opportunity?
This is a very difficult question. Because for me, I think it's both, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've been talking about the demographic dividend for years and years and years now. The mm-hmm. African Union has, the demographic dividend has become a slogan in the African Union, right? About mm-hmm. how we're so lucky in Africa that we have pretty much the youngest population in the world, right? We have the biggest space for that demographic dividend to occur because of how young our continent is. And mm-hmm. that's such an amazing opportunity for growth, for innovation, for new ideas, for young leadership, to really invest in the future of the continent, right? To be able to say, we have 200 million people between the ages of 15 and 24. What do we do with them, right? And how do they shape what this continent looks like? Young people have fresh ideas, fresh perspectives, always finding new ways of doing things. And how do we leverage that to ensure that our communities can develop and our economies can grow and our countries can be better off? And so it's a great opportunity, but there's always the other side. And I think if we think about the caliber of leadership that we have across the continent, our youthfulness and the numbers that young people bring and the opportunity that it brings is actually a threat and is actually a low point. So I can obviously only speak from the South African context. I'm not going to speak for other countries lest I get dragged. But in South Africa, for example, you find you have leadership that actually just doesn't know what to do with all the young people in this country, right? Even when you set up ministries that are supposed to deal with young people, there's no vision. There are no ideas, right? It's led by older people. So young people are even pushed out of that process of determining what our own future looks like. We don't have leadership that actually invests in young people, invests in saying, what are the kinds of capabilities that young people need to be able to live the kinds of lives that they want to? Right? What are the obstacles that young people face that we can help solve so that they can go off and do their own thing, right? It's not about saying, let's handhold young people from cradle to grave, right? But it's about saying, what kind of environment can we create so that young people can flourish? And we just don't have the kind of political leadership across the continent that prioritizes young people in the way that they should. And so there's a big kind of disconnect, because you hear these leaders, right? I mean, if you pay attention to the African Union heads of state summits that's had, you know, every year, and all of the stuff that comes out of like the youth division that sits in the AU, our leaders talk for days and days and days on end about this demographic dividend, you know, the power of young people. But when you then look at practice, it's almost like they're scared of actually investing in young people and seeing what opportunities it presents. And so, you know, in theory, in a nice, wonderful dream world, it's a wonderful thing to have such a booming young population. But in the absence of proper leadership that can actually do something with that resource, you know, it kind of falls flat. It's almost like if you stumble onto a massive gold reserve, but you don't know what to do with it, then it just sits on the ground and it can't do anything, you know? And that's kind of what we're facing right now, is that we have all of the words, we have all of the speeches and all of the summits and conferences and slogans and, you know, all of that, but we don't actually have programming, planning, strategic policy development that can actually say, let's put what we're saying into action so that we can actually leverage this amazing young population that we have and see the kind of growth that this continent can acquire. Because we know that, you know, our economies on our continent are not growing as fast as they could be. And it blows my mind that our leaders haven't actually figured out that what you need to do is invest in young people. So it's a wonderful gift, but it's also a horrible curse.
Yeah, and I really love what you said about, you know, it's as if our leaders have stumbled onto a gold mine, but are just not even sure what to do with it. And the investment in young Africans through education, through skills, through strong social infrastructure and employment opportunities is so critical for us to really ensure that this youth boom is not an economic burden, but is indeed an economic opportunity. Now, how can youth unemployment be reduced? And again, this is a very broad question, but perhaps you can also speak to the work that you're doing at Youth Lab and some trends that you've seen.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, you know, I cannot answer this question broadly for everybody involved. Please don't hold me to it. But I think one of the main things, so there's obviously a whole lot of different stakeholders in this problem that we have, right? And so if we start with the state, our governments need to be a lot more inclusive in the ways in which young people are spoken about and planned for. So I'll give you an example. In South Africa, we have a national youth policy. If anybody has heard me talk about this anywhere in the last 2 years, you'll know that this is a very, very sore spot for me. We have a national youth policy that's drafted by the minister in the presidency that's responsible for youth. And that policy lapsed, or the time of the policy had ended, and it was time for a new policy to be created. And the department or the ministry copied and pasted the same policy and said, okay, here's the new one. And they thought no one would notice. They've now kind of revised it. I mean, it's not a great revision, but that whole process of simply photocopying a policy and saying it's now going to apply for the next 10 years, I think is the perfect example of the ways in which young people are viewed by our political leaders. Is that they think we're apathetic. They think we don't care about what's going on around us. That, you know, we're just out here trying to go to groove and live nice lives, and we're not interested in anything meaningful. And so they treat us that way, right? And we all know that that's just untrue, that young people actually care a lot about what happens, because the truth of the matter is that we inherit our country, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the older generation. And so for me, I think we need to have a big shakeup in the way our leadership views youth, and particularly youth unemployment, that it's not a one-shoe-fits-all situation. It's not a, you can't entrepreneurship your way out of unemployment. You can't innovate your way out of solving the unemployment crisis. You have to be able to understand that there are a range of factors that go into the reasons why young people are unemployed and deal with those things. So for example, if there's an employment opportunity for me, but I live in a community that doesn't have roads, how do I easily access employment opportunities? So it might not be that the government needs to create that job for me. It might be that they need to actually fix my street, right? Yeah. If I'm a young woman in South Africa and I have a job that requires me to work at night, it's never going to happen, right? Because my safety is, I mean, threatened during the day. So let's not even, you know, talk about what happens at night. And so it might not be that you need to create more jobs for young women. It might be that you need to make your country safer so people can find their own opportunities. And so I think that approach to employment, that actually there are so many other factors other than just the availability of jobs, is a starting point for reducing unemployment. The other thing is, you know, we often don't talk about the private sector in conversations like these, but I think that there needs to be a real push towards what role does the private sector play in shaping society. And people love to say, oh, you know, but it's business and a business's job is to make money. That's not true anymore. And we have to dispel that notion that that's the only thing that private companies are here to do. They have to make a meaningful contribution towards society. And it goes beyond just kind of offering little internships here and there. It's about giving young people opportunities, exposure, skills, support, guidance, mentorship that they won't get in other spaces, right? Mm. And unless those things can happen in in drastic ways, we're going to be kind of running around in a very small circle. The last thing on this is I think there needs to be a shift in what we value as work. And so we say to young people, go to school, go to university, get a degree, and you'll get a job. That doesn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. We also say to them, no, you can't leave school. If you leave school, you're not going to be employable. And then we say, oh, but then you don't have any skills, the skills we need of mm-hmm. artisans and boilermakers and all of those things. You know, you just don't have it. So young people are stuck in a value system that says a degree is the easiest way to employment. And now that the world is showing us that that's actually not true, we're not able to shift our thinking and prioritize and value other things more. So someone who went to a vocational college, a TVET, as we would call it in South Africa, won't have the same value in the employment system as somebody who has a master's degree. And that's one of the things that we need to change, is to understand that society has to allow for multiple layers of people to exist and for multiple things to coexist at the same time and all hold the same value. We can't say that we need a degree more than we need a skill, right? And when we value those things a bit more, when we say, actually, people who went to vocational training, your training, your expertise, the qualification you receive there is just as meaningful as a tertiary degree. You begin to change the way people look at work, the way people see themselves in the labor market, right? Because I think a lot of it, especially for young people, is we're viewed as just a labor force. You're just seen as from your ability to produce. And people are more than that. And when you start to value the kinds of skills and experiences and expertise that people have outside of the big formal spaces that we've created, we open up the space for more opportunities. And that's how we begin to kind of address the unemployment issue.
Sure. And I think you've shared with us such a layered response that looked at not only what the involvement of government needs to be, but also of private sector, and also in terms of just shifting our mentality. How do we value skill more than having a degree? And we have definitely seen that we do have many unemployed graduates who are then told you need work experience before we can give you the job. And then they're just trapped in that cycle. My last question for you is, you know, we mentioned earlier in the intro that young women are more affected by unemployment than young men. And what can unemployed young women do to change their circumstances? And this obviously understanding that burden is not just on us. I mean, there have to be a lot of structural changes that happen. But just from your own perspective as a young woman, what can we do to change our unemployment circumstances?
You know, I think the gender question around employment is such an interesting question, because young women and women generally in the world are by far the most hardworking people you will come across, right? The pressures of maintaining homes and families and domestic labor and all of those things mean that young women always have to have a plan, right? They always have to figure things out, because the world is incredibly cruel to women and Black women in particular. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think one of the biggest things that young people can do is collaborate. Capitalism has made it so that we're all competing with each other all the time. If you're not competing, you're dead. You know, everything is about being better than the next person, having more opportunities than the next person, getting more money than the next person. And the truth is, the things that pull us out of whatever political or economic challenge we're in is community, right? And I know it's a very kind of hippy-dippy way of responding to the question, but I think for me, young women particularly have immense power, because we're so smart, we're so creative and innovative, and we exist in a world that doesn't want us around, but we're here anyway, right? And being able to build communities of support that allow us to uplift each other's skills and monetize our skills and be able to create our own employment opportunities through communities, I think is kind of the most natural thing for us to be able to do. So I'll give you an example. You know, we know how Stockwells work in different variations throughout the continent. And there's a group of young women who created something called a book Stockwell. And so it's for book lovers all around the country to contribute monthly, and they end up going and buying a set of books. You know, we know books are very expensive. And I mean, they've been going for quite a while now, and it's really a booming business that they've created. And what that did is it tapped into people's love of reading. It addressed the issue of the fact that books are actually really expensive and people don't have the money to always buy the books that they want. But it realized that actually we're much stronger when we do things together. And when you look at the kinds of initiatives that come out specifically from young women, it is those that operate within collaborative spaces that actually work well. And so it's about saying, what are the skills that I have that I can use? What are the skills that you have that you can use? How do we work together so that we can both make some money, so that we can both get opportunities, and so we can both pull ourselves out of at least the immediate issues that we face? And I think that goes across the board for young people in general, is that there has to be more community and more collaboration. If we just look at our political power, right? And I mean, this is like one of my favorite things to talk about, so I'm going to end with that. But if you think about the sheer numbers in South Africa, for example, if all young people voted for one party, for example, that party would win. Yeah. Young people can actually, by ourselves, decide who will run this country. But we sit with so much competition. And I mean, it's by design, right? It's not a fault of ours by any measure. But we underestimate the power that collaboration and community building can bring in being able to address the challenges that we have. And so I think for me, we're, as young people, we can't fix structures that we are not ourselves a part of, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing that we can do is create our own structures and our own systems that serve us. And I think that the best way to do that is through building communities and finding ways to be able to support each other. And that goes from, you know, young people who live in communities every day to young people who work in organizations like Youth Lab, young people who work in the private sector, whatever space that you're in, cultivate a community there and look at ways to help each other to find opportunities and to grow your own skills and your own abilities to make things happen.
Sure. And I think with that, I mean, that is just a fantastic way to end off, where we discuss the importance of you know, cultivating a community to be able to support one another, not to compete like what the world system have taught us to do, but to actually support and uplift one another as best as possible. Pearl, we thank you so much for just sharing so many gems. I mean, you've taken us through understanding the definition of unemployment and looking at the fact that the extended and expanded definition is the greater picture. We've really unpacked why youth unemployment on the continent is so high. We've looked at whether our youth boom is an economic burden or an economic opportunity, of which we agreed it's both, and our leaders are sitting on a gold mine and don't yet know what to do with it. You've shared on how private sector, government, young people need to create opportunities, need to upskill, but also we need to rid ourselves of the mentality that a degree is more important than a skill. And you've also highlighted how through community and through support, we can create different opportunities for one another as young people, particularly as young women. We thank you so much for joining us on the Africa Matters podcast. You've really, really shared such light and insight into this youth unemployment crisis. And we really look forward to seeing what Youth Lab, working alongside other organizations, will continue to do for us to see an end to youth unemployment in our lifetime. So thank you so much, Pearl.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning into the Africa Matters podcast. Please follow us on all of your favorite social media platforms. And this is Spotify, this is Sasai, this is Google Podcasts. Anywhere you'll be able to find the Africa Matters podcast. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you look forward to the next few episodes. And thank you to the team at Engage Podcast Network. the Africa Matters team, and a big thank you to our special guest today, Pearl Pillay. Have a wonderful, wonderful day further, and we'll see you for the next thought-provoking conversation.